3 days went by. They waited for another bat thing or another cyclone of leaves, but there was nothing immediate in the wake of the light show. The Buick just sat there. Troop D's piece of Pennsylvania was quiet, especially on the second shift, which suited Sandy Dearborn right down to the ground. One more day, and he'd be off for two. Huddy's turn to run the show again. Then, when Sandy came back, Tony Shaindinks would be in the big chair, where he belonged. The temperature in Shed B still hadn't equalized with the temperature of the outside world, but was getting there. It had risen into the low 60s, and Troop D had come to think of the 60s as safe territory. For the first 48 hours after the monster light quake, they'd kept someone out there around the clock. After 24 uneventful hours, some of the men had started grumbling about putting in the extra time, and Sandy couldn't much blame them. It was uncompensated time, of course. Had to be. How could they have sent overtime reports for Shed B watching to Scranton? What would they have put in the space marked reason for overtime activity? Kurt Wilcox wasn't crazy about dropping the full-time surveillance, but he understood the realities of the situation. In a brief conference, they decided on a week's worth of spot checks, most to be performed by Troopers Dearborn and Wilcox. And if Tony didn't like that when he got back from sunny California, he could change it. So now comes 8 o'clock of a summer evening, right around the time of the solstice. The sun not down, but sitting red and bloated on the short hills, casting the last of its long and longing light. Sandy was in the office, beavering away at the weekend duty roster, that big chair fitting him pretty well just then. There were times when he could imagine himself sitting in it more or less permanently, and that summer evening was one of them. "I think I could do this job." That was what was going through his mind as George Morgan rolled up the driveway in Unit D-11. Sandy raised his hand to George and grinned when George ticked a little salute off the brim of his big hat in return. "Right back at you." George was on patrol that shift, but happened to be close by and so came in to gas up. By the 90s, Pennsylvania state troopers would no longer have that option. But in 1983, you could still pump your go juice at home and save the state a few pennies. He put the pump on slow automatic and strolled over to Shed B for a peek. There was a light on inside. They always left it on. And there it was, the Troop D bonus baby, old 54, sitting quiet with its chrome gleaming, looking as if it had never eaten a state trooper, blinded a frog, or produced a freak bat. George, still a few years from his personal finish line, two cans of beer and then the pistol in the mouth, jammed way up and back past the soft palate, not taking any chances. When a cop decides to do it, he or she almost always gets it right. Stood at the roll-up door, as they all did from time to time, adopting the stance they all seemed to adopt, kind of loose and spraddle-legged like a sidewalk superintendent at a city building site. Hands on hips, pose A, or crossed on the chest, pose B, or cupped to the sides of the face if the day was especially bright, pose C. It's a stance that says the sidewalk superintendent in question is a man with more than a few of the answers. An expert gent, with plenty of time to discuss taxes, or politics, or the haircuts of the young. George had his look and was just about to turn away when all at once there was a thud from in there, toneless and heavy. This was followed by a pause. Long enough, he told Sandy later, for him to think he'd imagined the sound in the first place, and then there was a second thud. George saw the Buick's trunk lid move up and down in the middle, just once, quick. He started for the side door, meaning to go in and investigate. Then he recalled what he was dealing with, a car that sometimes ate people. He stopped, looked around for someone else, for backup, and saw no one. There's never a cop around when you need one. He considered going into the shed by himself anyway, thought of Ennis, 4 years and still not home for lunch, and ran for the barracks instead.